I don't think they deserve it.
Well, I don't know. I think it's hard to judge. I mean, it's interesting. I think you're suggesting, some conspiracy theorists would say, well, these guys went after the city attorney's office or the city manager's office, I'm not sure which office it was, in retaliation for the actions of the city against the city council coffee clutch, maybe, and other people might think, well, they went after the parks because of the retaliation for the campground decision. I mean, until I see some written, communiques from people who've allegedly done this, I don't see any clear connection. So that's my deal.
See the editorials from it come up this week. That's when we'll start seeing editorials.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
I don't. I've actually been reading the local rag sheet for articles, and I haven't seen anything addressing it so far.
Right. Well, at least you're addressing it, and now I'll just have to.
And they're in such a way that they'll come out and they'll cover 2 weeks worth of report.
Quite possibly, it's the Santa Cruz Urinal's usual process. Thank you for calling in there.
They have to have time to recollect it or collect and rehash stories.
Right. Well, we'll put those in the lawn clipping.
I won't make any accusations or innuendos out of character.
Well, just keep your hoses away from city council buildings, will you please?
I have no desire, sir.
I mean, we know they're all wet already, right?
Okay. Well, we didn't start the fire.
All right. Maybe we have to douse it. Talk to you later. So, yeah, you're not going to find me championing vandalism. On the other hand, you're not going to find me getting terribly excited about it either, given the kind of institutionalized hate crime that goes on with the city's endorsement. So, I don't know. I don't like vandalism. I don't want people to mess up my stuff. I guess when they're going after city offices, it could have a political component to it. That's what this caller suggests. But again, until I see the documentation, I don't know what these people are doing. And all I know is it gives the police and authorities a good excuse to start another witch hunt. That's the usual deal. In the meantime, you can get in touch with us. You can start your own witch hunt, hopefully against some of the real nasty folks. I'm talking about our city council at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz here at 96.3. I was reading you this rather tacky editorial in the San Jose Mercury News attacking the just eviction law. No doubt by some landlord ass kisser, frankly, that's my guess. It's Kathy Thibodeau, who is the chief executive officer of, surprise, surprise, the Tri-County Apartment Association. Well, let's hear the rest of her article, and then we can hear a response by Jane Herman of Service Employees International Union. But here is Kathy's landlord perspective. Hundreds of renters allegedly are being evicted illegally every month. However, there is no evidence of such widespread abuse. We at the Tri-County Apartment Association have been urging groups for several months to invite us to intervene with owners when improper eviction is alleged. Despite our pleas, they've been able to point to only a handful of suspected cases. A close examination of these cases reveals that current laws afforded ample protection for those who exerted their rights. Just cause eviction is unnecessary. The focus should be on educating renters on their protections under existing law, instructing owners on their obligations, and enforcing the laws we have. One way to ruin a great neighborhood is to make it hard to evict bad tenants. That's what just cause eviction would do. The hardest hit would be the low-income areas in San Jose that are beginning to feel the positive effects of the city's Strong Neighborhoods initiative. They have suffered enough. I'm not sure if this is the same initiative that is driving the homeless people out of parks and driving Food Not Bombs away. Not sure. Do we really want to deal a crushing blow to the effort to rid neighborhoods of crime and blight? Do we want to drive out responsible apartment owners and discourage people from investing in rental housing? Do we want just cause eviction? No way, San Jose. And that's, of course, the landlord's PR person, Kathy Thibodeau. Now let's hear Get Out in 30 Days, Why We Don't Need a Reason by Jane L. Herman. She's a retired member of the SEIU, Local 715. Organizations in the coalition Housing for All include the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, ACORN, the Newspaper Guild Communications Workers of America, Local 39098, People Acting in Community Together, PACT, the South Bay Labor Council, AFL-CIO, and Working Partnerships USA. And here is Jane Herman's article. Imagine that you received a letter from the government saying you and your family must leave your home in 30 days. You call for an explanation and are told, "We don't need a reason. Pack your bags, and if you fight this, we will make sure you never live in the valley again." Now consider what happened to Sandra Torres, a community leader with the First Congregation Church and with Sherman Oaks School. She lives in a duplex with her three children. A full-time grocery checker, she uses most of her salary to pay her rent and maintain her apartment. Sandra received a 30-day notice right before her 5-year-old son was to have surgery. No reason was given. Based upon a survey of legal services, an estimated 100 people a day in Santa Clara County receive 30-day notices just like the one Sandra received. A just cause eviction law can prevent this injustice by allowing evictions for legitimate reasons, failure to pay rent, damaging an apartment, or disturbing other tenants, while prohibiting evictions for no stated reasons. Why do landlords evict tenants without reason? Often it is because they don't wish to make public their real motives, such as raising rent or getting rid of tenants who complain about code violations. A law to stop unjust evictions would provide San Jose renters with the stability they need. Neighborhoods thrive when people can develop roots. When renters are evicted, employers, schools, churches, and community associations all pay a price. Some landlords claim a just cause eviction will prevent them, a law will prevent them from evicting troublesome tenants. However, just cause laws specifically allow landlords to evict problem tenants. We will work to create a law that is fair to tenants and landlords. It appears that landlords would rather conjure up predictions to scare people than help craft a workable law. A just cause law does not increase crime, destroy neighborhoods, or shut down the court system. Just cause laws work well in the California cities that have them. If we seek fairness and stability in our city, we must prevent families, seniors, and other hardworking neighbors from losing their homes without being given a reason and a chance to reply. It is this basic moral reasoning that has brought together the unprecedented number of labor, faith, and community organizations to create Housing for All, an alliance that supports ending unfair evictions through the passage of a just cause ordinance. That's by Jane L. Herman. Get out in 30 days. Why? We don't need a reason. In today's Mercury News.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Robert, I've been on the air once before, and I'll try to be brief.
It's shocking. Go ahead, sir.
I want to call to the attention of the progressive, quote, leadership in Santa Cruz, the activities going over the hill in San Jose regarding tenants' rights. I want to call to their shameful attention. And this needs to be pointed out, Robert, and I may not be the most polite guy in town to point this out, but I think it is shameful.
It's just so rude, Bob.
Riparian corridors be damned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. They take a back seat to the necessity to stabilize housing for those that don't own property. It borders on a scandal that this town likes to call itself progressive and cannot rise to the occasion where it can take on tenants' rights in a meaningful way.
Let me ask you this, Bob. I've been reading about this just cause eviction ordinance pro and con in San Jose, but it's been pointed out by both the authors, or at least by the author in the editorial in the Mercury News, that it doesn't mean much to have a just cause ordinance unless you have a rent control ordinance. Is that accurate?
Just cause is a mini form of rent control. They go well hand in hand, as Randy Silverman will point out. San Jose has a rent control, a modest form of rent control, without a just cause eviction rider on it. So that even with rent control, you can boot somebody out with a 30-day notice.
Right, that's what they're
right.
concerned about in San Jose. But my question to you is, would it make any sense to have an ordinance in Santa Cruz that's just cause without a rent control
Absolutely.
Ordinance? Now explain how that would work.
Because what it says is that you cannot just boot somebody out because the market will bear a rent gouge. You have to give a just cause. You have to give a reason why a tenant has to be booted out. So it's a modest form of rent stabilization, rent control. I think it also opens the gate up to dialogue to the broader issue, which is a rent stabilization board. Yes, we should proceed with a just cause ordinance here in Santa Cruz. By the way, you remember Operation Just Cause? What was that about?
Wasn't Operation Just Cause something about the... I guess I'm thinking about Desert Storm.
It was bombing somebody.
Probably was, yes.
For the life of me, I can't remember what it was about. Operation Just Cause.
Well, all you military buffs, you better call in and let us know what Operation Just Cause was.
But as we were chatting Friday with Randy Silverman, the former chair of the Berkeley Rent Stabilization Board, who, by the way, is a UC Santa Cruz alumni and very fond of the town and would like to help us down here to get our tenants' rights act together. If you look at four organizations that control the politics in this town, SCAN, the SEIU 415, the People's Democratic Club, and the Green Party. And as far as I'm concerned, they do. If you don't have an agenda that's going to be backed by those organizations, which they think they can win on, you ain't going to get anywhere in this town.
Mm-hmm. A sad truth, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and the, this whole idea of winning. You know, if you read, and Helen, Jane Herman, I saw Jane Herman speak several times over the Hill when I was going to their meetings. Very articulate member of the local 715. The local SEIU 715 union got right behind tenants' rights immediately after the Joe Rodriguez forum in December. They didn't hesitate. They saw it as a priority reality.
Whereas when you brought this issue to Nora Hockman's SEIU locally, what did you find?
I didn't get to talk to Nora Hockman. I talked to David Werlin and who's the head of the union.
Cliff Tillman.
Tillman. Okay, mm-hmm. And I did meet with them twice. They let me speak twice.
Right. And what did they say?
The whole thing came up is that will it win?
Will it win? Yeah.
It's all about winning. Mm-hmm. And I've said this before. When tenants' rights, when rent control, when just cause becomes an issue on the Santa Cruz City Council agenda, God damn it, forgive my language, it'll be when it can be bandwagoned, when it can be usurped by a bunch of mediocrats that don't have the courage to get behind a principle that they claim to be about.
In the meantime, how can people get behind this issue and talk to you about it, Bob?
They can give me a call anytime. They can call 466-0500. There will be meetings in the future one way or another. Michael Schmidt, I think, is playing an interesting angle in all this. Something will come out of meetings with Michael Schmidt. At least we will have some of the real estate interests at the table. That we can de-emotionalize these issues like rent control and just cause ordinance. Randy Silverman certainly has made himself open to come to Santa Cruz on a more periodic basis. So we will scan be damned, forgive my language again.
Nicely put.
We will be organizing on some level an attempt to get these issues, which are extremely meritorious and just and proper and homegrown. Be addressed by this community. So anybody that wants to call can call me, and certainly Donna Dice remains very active in the tenants' rights issue.
Give your number again, Bob.
My number is 466-0500.
And Donna Dice is
426-0644.
Correct.
Okay. I would say that within a month we'll have something going one way or another, either through Mike Schmidt whenever he gets his meeting together, and or we'll do something independent with Randy Silverman. I'd like to get Randy down here for the Mike Schmidt meeting, in fact, by the way. At some point, these issues are going to become unsuppressible and unspin-outable. The Santa Cruz progressives have this tendency of task forces as a way to spin out issues, and the classic would be the Homeless Issues Task Force. I said this last time on your show. Most people do not realize that the Homeless Issues Task Force unanimously endorsed rent control, unanimously endorsed removing the sleeping ban portions of the camping ban. Am I correct?
The entire camping ordinance.
There you go. I stand corrected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So it was a $10,000 to $20,000 let's employ Don Lane boondoggle.
Correct.
Now, I know there are more polite ways to say this, but this is 2001, uh-huh. And all the protests at the town clock regarding Israel, get out of Palestine, are a farce when it gets down to the legitimate, proper right of the government to protect those without property. It's
gotcha.
Shameful. Robert, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, we'll see how effective Bob is in joining the those of us who are trying to spread a little shame on these shameless politicians. After all, they're shameless, so they need a little shame, and then maybe they can see how shameful they are.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hi.
This is Xavier.
Hey, Xavier, long time no hear.
Yeah, I was just down in Flea Market, and I was listening to your show. Good show.
Thank you.
Can I make a point?
Please.
Okay. I was just thinking about capitalism, how it kind of has a loose claim on what it's for, what its purpose is that it takes capital, money, value, and it distributes it to its highest and best use. And I think about that, and I think about landlords, and I think, well, if I like take a bunch of money that I make and just throw handfuls of it at a landlord every month, what value are they providing me in return for that? You know.
Well, it helps with their foreign investments.
Foreign investment.
Just kidding.
Well, I guess what I was thinking about was that the news article you were just reading,
mm-hmm.
I said something about, well, good landlords are gonna like move out of the area. And do you recall exactly what you said in that?
No, let's see. This is from Kathy Thibodeau, who's the PR person for the Tri-County Apartment Association. Do we want to drive out responsible apartment owners and discourage people from investing in rental housing? That was her claim. That's what a just cause eviction law, she says, will do, although I frankly don't believe her.
What I was thinking is if you do create a situation where you have, you know, whether it's government or just people rising up saying, we're not going to take this, then these landlords will move out, the property values will drop, and the people who live in the houses might be able to afford them.
Well, are they truly as privileged and as knowledgeable as the landlords? I think we want to keep our betters in power. Otherwise, what will we do next?
Well, it's just like in a lot of, quote, third world countries that, like, say, England used to have as their, what do you call that? Just countries that, colonial countries, you know? It's like, well, if we give them back to the people, they'll just be chaos and anarchy, you know? And I think you got to teach people, you've taken the power of people to self-govern themselves away for generations, and they might forget how to do that. But, you know, I think that overall, I have a lot of confidence in people's ability to take care of themselves.
Oh, you anarchist dog, you.
Yeah. Well, that's just a thought I wanted to make. I just think that a lot of times, you know, this idea of the highest and best use, you give certain people money, the ability to amass capital, and the argument that capitalism makes is that they can then put that money towards its highest and best use, and I really think that the people who produce wealth with their hands and, you know, they're much more capable of deciding what's in their own best interest, so I just wanted to make that point.
You're obviously an advocate of class warfare and should be snuffed out immediately.
You gotta find me, right?
Good point. Trace this call, officer. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Robert.
All right, Xavier.
Thanks.
Well, we're certainly getting a variety of old-timers, new-timers, and folks in between on the free radio here. That's what you're tuned to at 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Monday is the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board meeting, or as they call themselves, the Citizens Police Review Board meeting. I haven't had too much to say about them, but I'm going to be talking a little bit about Christina Tafoya, the woman who stood up to harassment in the Beach Flats. She's coming to that 5:30 meeting, and I invite others to come too. I'm going.
You're on Free Radio.
I have a humble request for the programmers of Free Radio.
Wait a minute, are you on your knees?
No, absolutely not.
Well, get down on your knees.
Okay, okay.
All right.
Gosh, I'm such a pushover.
You are so. Okay, a little lower. Okay.
No, okay.
Now show me your pecs.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Okay. If V-Man could call in and give his opinion on the flooding of the City Hall and stuff, that'd be cool.
Oh, okay.
Or V-Man.
It was probably V-Man and who knows? It could have been Cynthia Matthews and this unholy coalition.
Don't be freaking fronting the V-Man, dude. Hey, I ain't down with that right now.
Oh, well, okay.
You need to put this phone up on the hook, dude.
Just a thought.
And freaking take that back.
Well, I know that
you'll be
Cynthia,
dissing the V-Man, dude.
They've been seen around town together.
This conversation's over. You dissed the V-Man.
Well,
and for those who didn't catch it, I'm not really suggesting that there is a new heartthrob relationship between the V-Man and former council member Matthews. That was a gratuitous and obnoxious comment on my part, which has no basis, in fact. And any similarity to real persons is purely coincidental. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. As I think I said before, boy, I'm sounding like a tape. I guess I've become a loop tape in my old age. What I was talking about was Christina Tafoya. You may remember Christina was a Latina woman who was harassed by police around midnight in a park. Not even in a park. It's the area in front of the community trailer that's actually just a couple of payphones, a concrete walkway, and then there's a basketball court. It goes between, I guess, Lee Brandt Street and, it's not Lee Brandt Street, it's, it's a couple of those side streets in the Beach Flats area. And she was given a ticket for being in the park after dark, which was thrown out finally by Judge Mulligan, although I think he charged her for a failure to appear, which is another one of his typical hoaxes that he likes to pull on unwitting defendants in his courtroom. Remember, always disqualify referee Mulligan. No ifs, no ands, no buts. Disqualify him. So, Tafoya claimed she was taken to the ground, her clothes were soiled, she was handcuffed, held for 45 minutes in a squad car, abusively treated verbally by numerous officers. She filed a complaint giving the names and numbers of various officers and also the names of two sergeants, Vogel and Clark, who then claimed that they weren't there. She didn't say she'd read their names. She said that she'd heard people addressed as Sergeants Vogel and Clark. So it may have been that other officers were trying to get those sergeants in trouble or making jokes about them. Then what happened was the Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, defending Sergeant Clark, sort of dismissed her case completely. But it is coming up tomorrow before the Citizens Police Review Board, 5:30 City Hall. Be there.
David Silva. We're just talking about Christina Tafoya's case coming up tomorrow before the CPRB at 5:30 at City Hall. And you, of course, are a man who has also had some rather, should we say, untoward experiences with the police?
Yeah, but, you know, they're going to pay through the nose.
I hope so.
That's the only thing you can do with this Stalinist fashion.
You've heard that Steve Argue was assaulted by trollbusters this morning.
No, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, it's the latest news. I haven't heard anything more from him, and I encourage you, if anybody
sure,
knows...
It wasn't trollbusters.
It was by trollbusters, apparently.
The police were just monitoring it.
No, it could have been that, who knows what was going on. But anyway, let me give you a chance to speak.
Yeah, I got some interesting literature from the Stabolitionists.
The Stabolitionists?
Stabolitionists.
What is that?
Well, I think S.B. Stab, I think that's Sleeping Band Abolitionists.
Oh, Sleeping Band Abolitionists.
Yeah,
okay.
Abolitionists.
This is the, is this the group that was the Monday morning group?
No, not at all. This is a group that's a direct action group.
Oh, good,
and
good.
They're calling for a wake-up call. They've been doing it now for a while, but I thought I should share it with you. So everybody out there, get your pens and pencils ready.
Okay, give them a moment here.
Okay.
We're talking to David Silva on the line, calling from Watsonville, my man.
Just repeating what I'm getting in my email.
By the way, have you heard anything about the Green Party's meeting yesterday? I've already suggested...
I haven't heard a thing.
That you are, should we say, less than happy with the Green Party at the moment.
Not to contact me unless they've taken action.
Action on...
Action, period. On anything.
Uh-huh. Well, it's not a lot to expect of the Green Party. After all, they did elect Tim Fitzmaurice.
Did they? Or did Scaff?
Well, Ed Porter did... He was a Green Party endorsed candidate.
He was a litmus test candidate. Actually, Ed Porter was the only candidate who, you might say, has some splaining to do. Okay, here, let me read these phone numbers. Wake-up call procedure, as I understand it, is what they have here at the bottom of this little flyer I got. It says, be civil, call when you choose, and perhaps use a payphone. I would assume that, you know, you're going to be calling people in the middle of the night, you want to use a payphone.
Mm-hmm.
So here are the numbers they have. Of course, the 420-5017 is the safe number to get to all city council persons.
And it won't wake anybody up.
It won't wake anybody up. And then there's the 454-2200, which is the number for the board supervisors.
Which also won't wake anybody up.
But here we go. Chief Belcher, 429-1757. It's all area code 831, in case you're getting this on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And 420-5810 is his number at work. Chief Hammock, who's the chief of the park rangers, 438-6873. I understand all these numbers in the phone book, by the way.
Mm.
420-5270 is his work number. But if you're going to give him a wake-up call, call the first number. Mayor Fitzmaurice, there's a number they have that I don't even recognize, 459-2483.
Mm.
So that must be a new inside line or something. And Ed Porter, they have 427-0836. He prefers calls after 10 p.m. before 6 a.m. That's his message machine said.
Are you kidding?
Well, that's his message machine said.
Really?
Scott Kennedy is 457-8003. Mark Premack is 426-9340.
Marty Wormhout they have listed as major opponent. Marty Wormhout, 426-0894. And they also have major opponent Andy Schifrin, 423-3154. And it says, be civil. Call when you choose, and perhaps use a payphone. And they have a list of several different things you can do. Same thing we've been always saying, you know, wear a blanket, write them a letter, send them an email, you know, city council at ci.santa-cruz.ca.us.
That's not Santa Claus, I can tell you that.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess it's time for wake-up calls, since that seems to be the only thing that's ever worked in the past. I guess the abolitionists are all right on track.
So there hasn't been any word from the Greens as to what happened at yesterday's assembly?
No one's called me, but I told them not to call me. I said, don't call me until unless you take action.
I guess you may be waiting a while with that phone.
I may be waiting a while.
Hey, David. Well, those are the numbers that people should call if they wish to, should we say, give a wake-up call to various politicians.
So those actually are enforcing and making sure, and having, you know, those secret illegal Brown Act violation meetings that Marty Wormhout likes to have. You know, she has a lot of those.
But it's all for the progressive good, David.
The progressive rich good. This is not a left or right issue. This is an up and down issue. This is a class issue that just the left and right doesn't. I mean, you know, let's face it, you know, Pot Paul was a left-winger.
Yes, one of my favorites, Pol Pot.
So anyway, those two main wake-up numbers is 429-1757 and 426-0894. And I would say that they're probably right. Do use a payphone. Most homeless people get waken up at 2:30 and 6:30, as I understand from what I... general surveying.
But that's only for their own good, David.
I know, and this is only for these council persons' own good, is what this family
give them the homeless experience.
Yeah, save their soul.
I see.
Soul.
Is Father Marini going to head this charge, do you think?
I'm sure Father Marini is behind this, actually.
Very interesting.
It's
a Catholic conspiracy, eh?
There's a lot of Catholic money coming in to the area to try to solve some of these problems. I don't want to see where it goes. I have to get off the line now.
Kick-ass, Silva.
I just wanted to share this to you in case you didn't get the email.
Hey.
I don't know if you got the email or not. It was a hard attachment to open.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'll check again.
The abolitionist.
Well, there you are.
Did everybody get those numbers? 429-1757.
If you didn't get those numbers, you can always call the Huff line and we'll give it to you.
And I left a message on the Huff line so you can review the tape and repeat it.
Sounds good.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And that was that inveterate sleeping ban opponent, David Silva, passing on an email about wake-up calls to politicians and policy enforcers who would criminalize sleeping for homeless people. If you want any of those phone numbers, apparently they're all in the phone book, but David Silva's email, apparently the one he got from the SB abolitionists, whoever they are, and I haven't been invited to join their group either, I would like to point out, give this idea of calling the council members and police officials at home and letting them know what it's like to get a wake-up call. I should advise you that this is probably considered harassment by... hey, Bob. Considered harassment by... if you do it repeatedly and you may have to suffer legal consequences, I'm not advising it as a course of conduct, but I'm simply providing a conduit for free speech. As we say to city officials, get hosed. Anyway, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and you are tuned to Free Radio, and we are free, and we are radio, and we have our call-in line, 427-3772, actually open.
Sorry,
and
you can get in your way there.
We have this bizarre person who is wandering through the studio, fondling CD discs. He's very upsetting. I wonder if there's a police officer around who could come here and...
Security?
Just kidding, all you police officers who are monitoring the show.
You want some just kidding? Here's some just kidding.
This man is pumping his own band.
Stole it.
There you go.
What's up with that?
Hey, it's always good to have you here, Bob, with your analysis of events. However, your show doesn't come on for another half hour, big boy. Moving right along here. But we have... Now, here's an incoming call. Distract us from this foolishness.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Bob's show's bleeding into your show.
Well, that's for sure, man.
He's all over the place, dude. You gotta tell him to power down.
Bob is a bleeder.
He needs to power down, dude.
He's brought his young.
Your show's bleeding into yours like Dr. Laura used to bleed into his.
It's a bloody situation. Thank you for your call.
I tell you, man.
Yes. Anyway, getting back to the Bathrobe Spears broadside show that you are actually hoping to hear and may actually hear a part of it if we can proceed. No problem, Uncle Bob. Tomorrow, Christina Tafoya, her mom, Rose, and possibly some other folks from Beach Flats, other women who have been harassed by police officers there, will be appearing at the Citizens Police Review Board, which is at City Council Chambers at 5:30. And I encourage people to come on down, not because the CPRB is worth spit. It is not. But the people who are going to speak about this issue publicly are worth supporting, and that's why I encourage people to come on down. I'm going to play a little bit of an old interview with Christina Tafoya. Unfortunately, due to technical difficulties, half the interview is erased, but half of it that remains is still of interest, and I'm going to play it for your edification, assuming I can find the right tape. Here we go. I may have to decipher a bit of it for you, but I think you'll catch the gist of it. This was originally played, I believe, on the air. And I believe Christina and her mom were both on the air as well.
You also were photographed in this situation?
Yes, that's one thing that I did neglect to tell the sergeant, but I was photographed.
Are you recording?
No.
It's a strange sound on the line. You hear it?
It's my phone.
Okay. I get a little paranoid at different times. Should I call you right back and try to skip the sound?
Actually, it takes a while for it to charge.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, let's ignore it and proceed. Still there? Hello?
Yeah.
You were photographed. You also said that this has happened to other people, including a rather diminutive woman who went to court, got all the charges against her dismissed by Judge Kelsey because Kelsey found it not credible that a very small woman could intimidate a very large officer, right?
Excuse me?
Why were charges against her dismissed?
Because the judge did not see enough proof in the officer's story.
And then, again, the number of officers involved in this was about 9 or more?
I'd say about, at the most, 9.
So 9 or less?
Yes.
And you got the names or numbers of about 5 of them, but not because they gave them to you voluntarily?
No, because I looked and I wrote down what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And this is for the officers that say they weren't there, if I made a mistake, it was, not my fault. It was because when I asked questions, I was not given answers.
And you didn't really get too much of an answer from Sergeant McMahon either when you wanted to...
Find out if they were there? No, not at all.
I mean, for example, McMahon has photos of every police officer in the Bureau. She could have showed you a list of those photos and said, are these the people you saw? Which, in fact, is what they would probably do if it were a crime, if they were investigating a crime against a non-police officer.
I asked her if anything was going to happen, any sort of investigation, and she said not until I filed a complaint.
Mm-hmm. And, that's also not true. I suspect there's an administrative investigation happening right now inside the police department, but, of course, it's not an investigation that you or I know anything about because it happens inside the department. And, in fact, even if you do file a complaint, we aren't going to know what goes on with that investigation unless the Citizens Police Review Board asks for public hearings, which it has never done, ever, in its 7-year history. But still, I recommend you file with them because I think that the next person who wants to file a complaint about Sergeant Vogel or Sergeant Clark, assuming that those are the people that, you saw there, will have a record of...
And a bit of... I don't want to call it vindication, but time cards were finally released on Sergeants Vogel and Clark, which, in the view of the Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women's Police Subcommittee, exonerated both those sergeants. When Metro writer Sarah Phelan tried to get the same time cards, she was refused access to those cards. She also will be at this CPRB meeting on Monday, the Citizens Police Review Board meeting, on the case of was Latina woman Christina Tafoya abused by numerous police officers. She had thought that two of them were Sergeants Clark and Vogel because that's what they were calling them, although no officers apparently gave their names in this midnight rousting, which seemed to be or kind of racial profiling by her analysis, Latino racial profiling. Clark and Vogel were the names mentioned, but she had various other names as well. And the interesting thing that happened with the Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women was that they had no interest in the charges against her, in the abuses she suffered. All they cared about was whether Clark and Vogel were actually the officers involved, and since the time cards revealed that they apparently weren't, that just ended that. Even though there were other officers implicated, she was very specific as to the behaviors that went on that had been covered by a reporter for the Metro Santa Cruz. All that the Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women could think about was giving a clean bill of health to Sergeants Vogel and Clark and ignoring the victim, Christina Tafoya. Now, I presented a speech about this issue last week to the commission in no polite terms. I was not feeling very happy with them. I was feeling very angry with Amy, the police subcommittee person who apparently took no interest in even interviewing Christina Tafoya or Sarah Phelan or me. All she did was she sent out for the police point of view. Now, the thing that's happening tomorrow is the Citizens Police Review Board, which actually shares offices with the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, they will be meeting on this particular claim, this particular complaint by Christina Tafoya, who filed a complaint with the Police Review Board, which first goes through the police department. It's gone through the police department's IA, Internal Affairs. It's coming back to the CPRB tomorrow at 5:30. You can come and speak about it if you want. This is not a public hearing because they don't have the guts or the interest to do a public hearing, just like City Council hasn't got the guts or the interest to cover any important issues. And these people take after the people who appoint them, of course. They wouldn't want to offend their appointing City Council members. So, but still, the public can put in their two cents if they want, and I suggest you do. 5:30 tomorrow. Let's hear a little bit more of Christina Tafoya talking to me about 4 or 5 months ago about an incident that happened in August or September of last year. Again, she was unlawfully searched by a male officer. She was abused. She was held in handcuffs in a van on an infraction ticket. An infraction ticket for being in a park after dark. It just blows me away.
Complaints, and that can be helpful in court cases. You follow me?
I'm pretty sure that that's what I'm going to do, is file a complaint and see where I go from there.
All right. Well, I encourage you to tell your friends that if they have had any problems with the police, and I guess people have come to you and talked to you more as a consequence of this whole thing?
Yes.
People at work have been being supportive?
Oh, definitely.
And you haven't suffered any reprisals from the police yet, right?
Not yet. I'm hoping I won't.
I'm hoping you won't, too. They can give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's off air if they want to get in touch with you, and I will pass on their phone numbers to you so you can call them.
Okay, thank you.
And if any of them want to call in directly, of course, the radio line is 427-3772. Please call to the station and talk about what's happened to you, either in English or Spanish. And I guess hopefully at some time we can get you or your mom or someone you know who's pretty good at translating to get the word out to both the Spanish and English speaking communities.
Mm-hmm.
I want to apologize for talking so much. I want to thank you for talking as much as I've let you.
Oh, okay.
And is there any more you want to say? Any thoughts you have on the subject?
No, I think I'm through.
Hey, Christina, thank you.
Okay. Well, it's good talking to you, Robert.
And this is a tape now of the... You were listening to Christina Tafoya talking to me. This is a tape of me talking to the Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. It's rather long, but I think it makes the point. Since this is my radio show, you're stuck with listening to this, or you could always, of course, turn the channel.
This is a letter to the commission. My name is Robert Norris. Thank you. Thank you, Pat. Some members of the audience have it, but some don't. The letter goes as follows. Some months ago, I brought to your attention, actually it was about a month ago, what seemed to be in a particularly egregious case of local police violence against a woman of color, Christina Tafoya. I was shocked to read in the May 14th Metro a letter vindicating the police department, apparently without any investigation or research. Your police subcommittee apparently made no effort to contact either the victim or the reporter who brought this story forward in the February 14th Metro. I spoke with your staff member about it. She explained to me that you do not intend to do investigation since police department records show that Sergeants Vogel and Clark were not on duty that night. You also suggested this discredited everything else that was reported by Sarah Phelan, the Metro reporter, and by me. All of this was magically determined, apparently in consultation with the police department, without speaking to me, Phelan, Tafoya, or investigating the facts in this issue, in this case. This is outrageous. I enclose a letter I have written for the Metro next week in order to more broadly acquaint the Santa Cruz community with your commission's apparent priorities here. These seem to be covering the police department's ass first, and then sticking it to their victims and those journalists who have the courage to bring these matters to public attention. I hope you will reconsider this blank check endorsement of the police department. Please actually talk to the victims and those journalists who have the courage to bring these matters to public attention. Before you pass judgment, what is the point of having your commission at all if you don't even contact the victims? I shall be holding up on my letter in hopes you will actually try to ascertain some of the facts of this case from non-police sources before going out of your way to serve as a PR arm of the police force. And this is the letter. Violence against women comes in all forms in Santa Cruz. Some of it, unfortunately, is from the SCPD and other police agencies, particularly against poor women and women of color. Amy, chair of the police subcommittee of the city's commission for the prevention of violence against women, seems to be the wrong chair of the wrong subcommittee on the wrong commission. I can find no other explanation that would help me understand why she seems to think that her job is backing up the police department rather than protecting the women that it victimizes. Perhaps the CPVAW is especially concerned with its good relationship with the police. Perhaps Amy has especially strong sympathies with the police department. But isn't the SPVAW supposed to be about supporting women who are victims of violence? The Metro's news column of 214 exposed blatant, extended, and tolerated abusive police behavior against Christina Tafoya. Tafoya, according to the Metro account, was harassed at midnight late last summer for being in a park after hours. The ticket was later thrown out of court. The Metro writes she was searched by a male officer, taken down on the ground, soiling her clothes, held in handcuffs for 45 minutes, threatened and abused. By the police, not by private individuals. According to Tafoya, more than half a dozen Santa Cruz Police Department officers were involved. Several police officers who refused to give their names were addressed as Sergeants Vogel and Sergeant Clark by other officers. Several months ago, Tafoya gave the Citizens Police Review Board a report on this in public and in person. I gave Tafoya's account to this body around the same time because Tafoya could not attend. Amy's subcommittee, and apparently the entire CPVAW, preferred not to investigate the substance of the charge to determine which police officers in particular were involved in this abuse if it happened as charged. Instead, Amy's committee apparently just took the word of the SCPD, who provided documentation that Vogel and Clark were not involved, publicly denounced the Phelan article, and closed the investigation. They did not contact Tafoya or Phelan at all. Apparently, the CPVAW's good relationship with the SCPD has allowed them to check the time cards that Metro reporter Phelan was denied access to. Sergeant Colleen McMahon, who took Tafoya's complaint, which reportedly lasted a full hour, long time to fabricate a complaint under penalty of perjury, folks, also did not offer Tafoya the chance to look at photos of police officers to identify who actually was there. Sarah Phelan was a witness to this and has it all on tape, in case you would want to reopen the case and look into it. I'm sorry, I get a little upset about this. Continuing. So Sergeant McMahon did not offer Tafoya the chance to look at the photos of police officers to identify who actually was there. Whether Tafoya got the names of the two cops right is hardly the point. Was she illegally detained? Was she improperly searched? Was she subjected to verbal abuse by our police department, one member of whom sits right over here? Is it a racial issue because of her color? Was a minority cop called over to give the ticket, as she claims, by the other officers to cover the racial profile? Why didn't the cops there give their names? These questions apparently don't concern RCPVAW. This is my letter to the Metro, which I'm hoping not to send, because I think they probably do concern you, and I'm concerned that you're suddenly going public with a justification and vindication of the police department that seems to me premature at best. The message is glaring. The CPVA... Still, it is shocking to see the speed with which a Latina woman's complaint can be so quickly turned against her and used to vindicate the police department and discredit journalists trying to get the truth out. This is the letter that I'm hoping not to have to send to the Metro, and I'm hoping that this commission will investigate this matter more fully. I was also told, by the way, that this should be left to the Citizens Police Review Board to look into. The Citizens Police Review Board is the fig leaf that covers the police department about the sum up here. They don't do independent investigations, they don't call witnesses, and they, in fact, with one exception, have essentially had no independent process whatsoever. And that independent process, when they had it, was completely secret, and so had no basis for giving the public any confidence. Your board has the power to do something else. Please use that power.
Person that wanted to
it's Pat Clark of the CPVAW
Oral Communications.
Well, nobody says anything. I understand something was said later, however. After I had left. Well, this is your last hurrah and mine. I've got 10 more minutes of the Bathroom Spears Broadside Sunday show, so if you want to add your broadsides to Bathrobe's Beers, it's time to give a quick call to 427-3772, 427-FRSC. That's our call-in line, so you can have the last word. But until you do, I'm just going to start reading some interesting stuff. Day laborers seek gathering place. Owner of current site vows to bar them. This is Washington Post. We're talking, it looks like, Washington, D.C. The Hispanic day laborers insist they are trying only to make an honest living as they gather to look for work each morning in two parking lots at University Boulevard and New Hampshire Avenue. The owners of nearby businesses in Tacoma Park and Langley Park complain that the workers are interfering with their livelihood by littering, leering at women, and generally scaring away customers. Hang on, we have a phone call.
Ron Free Radio?
Hello, this is Jim Reardon here at Golden Age Convalescent Hospital.
Are you convalescing there, Jim?
I can tell you, people... You know, it's really scary. I had one kind of coherent friend here, and he convalesced himself right to the grave just a couple of weeks ago.
So where is this place?
It's in Capitola.
And you're there because you're disabled, or...?
I have MS.
Uh-huh.
And initially, I came because, when I have... acute exacerbations of MS, I get hospitalized for a while, for the treatment of that. And usually that's maybe a two-week thing. But this time, I wound up in this place. There was no place to put me, I guess.
Hmm.
Yeah, so...
So I know you raise a number of issues in some emails. Would you like to summarize some of those issues for listeners if you think they're important?
I think the most... It's pretty bizarre. It's like, well... They're spending something like, it's over $100 a day, so that's $36,500 a year for keeping me in this place and the other place where people are here. And believe me, that's like insane. It's like, it's really,
Because the accommodations are poor?
Oh, goodness, yeah.
Tell me about the accommodations.
You get a little bit of space, but like the food is like, I kind of obsessively take care of my diet because of the MS. I've been like following a very specific MS diet, and it's impossible to do anything. You know, it's like junk food here.
Right, bad diet food.
Real bad diet. High in fat. I try to do like almost no fat.
Now, have you told them? I mean, do you have any input?
The guy who actually kind of runs the kitchen is kind of a nice guy. I've spoken to him, but they have to, you know, it's weird. This is a very chaotic kind of place.
Well, are you calling about the environment you're in? Or are you calling about something you've been hearing on the air? What's your topic here?
Oh, I don't know if I'm coherent enough to have a topic. I mean,
You better get coherent, buddy.
Oh, well, you. Hey, you're in charge of the A-waves.
I run the waves here, man.
Exactly, you run the waves.
I surf the A-waves.
I know. Well, what just recently happened was, I use these things. I need to stick plastic tubes up my thing to urinate.
Right.
And they're supposed to be sterile. Like when I first, years ago, in a different city, learned how to use them, the doctor who taught me that was very obsessive about it's very important that these are sterile.
These are catheter type things?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And because you can get really, really serious infections.
Right. Right.
And actually, a friend of mine died from that.
Right.
An MS patient. And so, you know, I always learned that was like a very important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Here it's like, forget it. You know?
There are no precautions made? They're sterile?
They're very, as opposed to just giving you as many as you need. Here, it's like every time you need one, you have to like, you know, beg, and they have some story about how that, you know, whatever. I think it's because they don't really know what they're doing. Like they're not supposed to be paying for that. You know, it's all supposed to be, you know, through, you know, whatever.
Have you complained about this to? First of all, are you conserved or are you?
No.
You're not conserved. Yeah, you're independent.
No.
And I'm trying to think of the right agency to complain.
Yeah.
You know, if anybody knows, how do you deal? I mean, I know that I've seen some pretty horrible conditions. Nursing home scandal, of course, has been big. In Santa Cruz, there have been scandals around this for years.
Yeah.
Is this a trailer park nursing home? What the hell is? What kind of a? I'm not sure. What is this here?
Right. I wouldn't say that. I mean, it's a building, but, you know, and they've been here for a long time, I guess. They're like, it's owned by all a Filipino family, and I guess that they've owned...
Are they supposed to provide you with services or just with the... What are they supposed to... You know, my problem is we're running out of time here on the air. Why don't you sort of summarize what you want to say, and we can always talk about this off-air at another time.
I mean, it's just the obscene part of it is just that they're spending $36,000 a year for me to be in a place like this when we've got a lot of homeless people. They're like, you know, it's like insane. It's like, excuse me, $36,000 a year, you know? Okay, how about this? I don't want the $36,000. I'll split that with like four homeless people. You know, get us some decent housing.
What you say makes a lot of sense. It ties in with, incidentally, a club. Well, let me put it this way. We had a homeless man whose daughter was disabled, lived in his van. They offered him some huge amount of money to get nursing care for his disabled daughter, and he'd take a fraction of that money and hire homeless people, and he actually got them to do it because he's such an out-front, kick-ass advocate.
Oh, good job.
And I just want to quickly announce, so we're going to have because I've only got a few minutes left, we have Club Cruise, the Channel 27... community TV program, which you can get if you get community TV. It has, I'm not sure what it's coming up this week, but next week, June 19th and 21st, Tuesday and Thursday at 7 to 7:30, Bikes and Cops. It's going to be yours truly interviewing Sean Duncan and Micah Posner on the infamous hit-and-run incident of January 20th at the town clock and how bicyclists are treated. Then at June 26th, June 28th, Rabbi Chaim Levin will be interviewed by Becky Johnson. Then on July 3rd and 5th, we're going to have Steve Elliott, who was earlier on the show. I call him the Rock Man Downtown. That'll be in a show also interviewed by Becky Johnson about his trials and travails. And then July 10th and 12th, there'll be, and this is really what's relevant here, a repeat performance of Scott Simons and his daughter Joy. She's the kind of brain-disabled person who appeared on the community television show in a quite a moving and articulate presentation. I interviewed them, of course. I mean, how else could it be? And for those who want more information about those shows, you can contact Becky Johnson at 429-8529, or you can email her at womanofsteel, W-M-N-O-F-S-T-L, at cruzio.com. Sorry to run that all past you on the phone there, Jim. I guess I got a roll. Anything more you want to say?
That's about it.
Hey, thank you for calling in.
Economically obscene, the way it's done. You know, we're the caring intelligence of the wealth of our so-called society.
I hear you.
Get sense.
Gotta go.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
And we're winding down. As soon as Skidmark Bob comes into the studio with his young thug friend, actually his son, and hardly a young thug, and a cute little guy he is, I'm going to have to give up the mic, much as I would love to go on forever. Actually, I've got to get rolling myself. I got stuff to do. I was reading about day laborers getting the hassles, as they have in Santa Barbara, as they have in Santa Cruz around San Lorenzo Labor. Well, here's something else. They towed my house away. Vehicularly housed residents stage an art auction rally to demand civil rights in San Francisco, June 5th. Vladan Pogorelov drifts off into visions of twilight as the inscrutability of night cloaks his metallic motor residence. The continuous thumps on his window force him to swerve back into the predictability of reality. Like a cub that looks into the eyes of a raging hyena, Vladan Pogorelov sees the eyes of a police smoldering with anger as he stands with a stick camouflaged by the night next to his side. Vladan knows he will be ordered to move his 25-foot motorhome to another location because it has suddenly become an object of scorn and frequent harassment by the SFPD and the Department of Parking and Traffic. The dire circumstances into which Vladan has fallen brought him and many other vehicularly housed San Franciscans to the steps of City Hall on Wednesday, May 30th, to ask for relief from a law that unfairly classifies, punishes, and renders them as criminals because they have a quilt and padding inside their legally owned vehicles. The volley of protests against human and civil rights violations at the event, dubbed They Towed My House Away by homeless advocates and civil rights attorneys, has put the ball back into the court of the Board of Supervisors and George Smith of the Mayor's Office on Homelessness.
You're on free radio.
Hey, Robert.
Yes.
Oh, you're still there.
I gotta go, but...
Oh, this isn't Bob. This is Robert. Okay, but I gotta ask something.
Quickly.
Hey, what do I do to keep people from stop pissing all over my... the building I work in, or in the alley by my house? How do I keep homeless people from peeing?
I would say put up a little sign that says where the nearest restroom is, if you know it, and suggest that you are homeless sympathetic, but...
Well, they already... Some of the guys that do it already messed up the bathroom, so they can't go in there.
Bummer. Well, then suggest to them that you have a hose and you'll hose them down. And I'm not suggesting that you hose down any city council offices, though I do have my eye on you.
Oh.
Got to talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So, it looks like the eviction squad has arrived. I'm going to finish this article, though, unless I get dumped here. I asked Paul Bowden, director of the Coalition on Homelessness, who along with Poor Magazine coordinated the event, to explain how the San Francisco Police Department can arbitrarily cite vehicles and cause people to lose their housing by having their motorhomes towed away, which has become, not unlike oxygen, a necessary condition for a reasonably healthy life. The municipal police codes that regulate parking were designed to make sure that poor people can be legally chased out of communities, just like its code that the parks are closed and a code that people cannot stand on the sidewalk. These are codes that government created in order to chase away and make disappear poverty in our community, which means not poverty, but poor people, the appearance of poverty. We are not talking about people who choose to be out there in vehicles, stated an outraged Bowden with the sting of an agitated wasp. I'm not going to be... giving any credits to this writing style, but let's hear some more. Pogorelov, or Vladlin, a 31-year-old staff writer for Poor Network News who immigrated to the United States from Crimea, was evicted from his apartment in San Francisco during the latter part of last year. He bought a motorhome in which he had hoped to eat and sleep as well as survive. Laudlin resided at China Basin in San Francisco, and according to him, became the target of an aggressive harassment campaign that included citations, illegal tows, and seizures of vehicles without due process. Adam Arms, an attorney with the Civil Rights Division of the Coalition on Homelessness, in response to my questions to him about statements brought by Poor Magazine, Coalition on Homelessness and Victims of the Vehicles, which have been seized by city officials, stated that the ongoing policy of the city has been to criminalize people who sleep in their vehicles. To tow their cars and misuse the laws has been the ongoing policy of the city. Also, they have targeted these people for harassment. However, in the last 6 months, this policy has escalated, stated Arms, as he held a copy of the vehicularly housed towed person's Bill of Rights, which he stated contained language which provides grounds for the city to relent in its ongoing policy to criminalize vehicularly housed residents. The San Francisco Police Department and Department of Parking and Traffic are authorized by law to issue a citation, which is called a red tag, to any vehicle that, in their opinion, appears abandoned or broken down or is not moving for an extensive amount of time. This law has been used to regulate vehicles that are not abandoned to obscure areas in remote tow garages and leave the victims marooned in a swirl of depression. I attempted to contact the director of the Department of Parking and Traffic, Fred Hamdan, to inquire about this aggressive policy which the city has adopted. I spoke with Diana Hammond, Public Affairs Director of DPT. I asked Hammond, why has the city invested so much energy in going after the 300 to 500 motorhomes in the entire city, the owners of which have had the misfortune of doubling up their vehicles for transportation and residence? According to Hammond, quote, the SFPD enforces the codes that regulate signs posted around San Francisco for illegally parked vehicles and not DPT. But if a vehicle is abandoned, then under DPT 37A, we can cite and tow that vehicle within the limits of the city, stated Hammond, in reference to vehicles that have been put out of mind and out of sight by their owners, like fallen trees in the forest. As Poor Magazine featured the Poe Poets, who conveyed the significance of the event at City Hall through their spoken words, actually, this guy is so flowery in his writing, I'm just going to skip to the last paragraph here. As the protest drew to a conclusion, the crowd prepared to hand-deliver a statement of the vehicularly housed towed person's Bill of Rights to each member of the SF Board of Supervisors. Vehicularly housed San Franciscans have the Constitution of the United States to protect them from harassment. The city, however, is not respecting those rights. This is the reason why we are taking the entire thing before the Board of Supes and asking them to implement the last 3 points right away and help people out. The last 3 points are, 1, the city shall implement a formal fee waiver procedure for indigent lawful owners, possessors, or operators of vehicles whose vehicles are towed. 2, the city shall create a centrally located body at which vehicularly located people can address issues related to payment of fees and fines, vehicle tows and recovery, and property retrieval. And 3, the city shall not prevent lawful vehicle owners, possessors, and operators from retrieving personal property contained within towed vehicles. So, if you are interested in rights for vehicularly housed people, give me a call at 423-HUFF. I'll hook you up with San Francisco and the Coalition on Homelessness. If you want to be on this show or you have stuff you want to talk about, give a call to 423-HUFF off air. That's 423-4833. I will usually get back to you within a day or two, assuming I'm in one piece. Steve Argue is not in one piece, unfortunately. I hope he's doing well. And if you want to be with us again, tune in on Thursday for another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadside between 6 and 8. Also, City Council meets on Tuesday. Haven't been able to cover that. I've become increasingly skeptical of their value. We'll have to talk about them at another time. I now turn you over to that old man of the airwaves, the vicious and lovable Skidmark Bob.
This is the folk festival, right? This is a modern folk song. All right, Grand Dermody, Artist of Spoon Man, myself, Jim...